is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Vanessa Roberts calls herself an artivist, a combination of an artist, an activist, and an academic. Her mother is from Germany, and her father is a self-proclaimed African. She learned as a child how to navigate between the two different cultures. Roberts was recently in La Crosse to share her performance art that deals with diversity and identity issues with students. She talks about how she describes her identity today.
Currently, I choose biracial. I have some issue with most language terms. I find them pretty restrictive, and I am a strong contender in the race as a social construct camp. So I try to push back against these notions of monoracial categories or boxes. But biracial, I think, is an important term because it acknowledges the full extent of my heritage. And a big shift that I've been making in the past few years has been removing the quantification of self and shifting to a valuing of the whole self. And so now I would say I'm biracial, both Black and German. So shifting from half to both has been a really important shift.
And I know you moved around quite a bit when you were growing up. Were there certain periods in your life, or maybe it depended on where you were living, that you were thinking more about your identity and related to different aspects of it at different times?
Yeah, it's definitely been a journey in that sense. I mean, living in Hawaii, where I was born, in Honolulu, I was too young to really notice anything. And Hawaii is actually well known for its embrace of interracial couples and multiracial individuals and has this really rich blended heritage. And so I think that was a great place to be born and to come up. And then after that, we moved to Germany and lived on a military base. So you have this amazing conflux of interracial families, American families, multiracial families. So it was this really incredible melting pot type of experience.
Where I would imagine just being in Germany too, maybe you're connecting with that side of yourself even more.
Very much so. I mean, we were really fortunate. We lived in Karlsruhe, which is a military, there was a military base there. And my mother's family was only about 2 hours away. So we spent a lot of time engaging in North German rituals of, you know, Kaffeezeit, you get together for coffee and cake, or you celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. My family is Catholic, so you celebrated what in German is called Namenstag, which is where you recognize your name, because oftentimes Catholic names are based on saints, and so my mother's name is Gabriele, Gabriel, so you would celebrate on that day and et cetera. So there was a lot of rich customs and heritage that came from being that close to the family. There was one time that we were actually in München, Munich, for Oktoberfest, and that was a riot. I was only, goodness, I was in high school, so I think I was 15 or 16, and so I didn't fully partake in the debauchery that often comes with Oktoberfest, but certainly a lot of Lederhosen, a lot of the beautiful Bavarian costumes and beer, and it was bratwurst and the whole experience. It's definitely one of those moments that stands out in your memory.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, I'm talking with Vanessa Roberts. She's based in Boulder, Colorado, and she describes herself as an artivist, an artist, activist, and academic. She's visiting La Crosse, giving a series of performance-based presentations on diversity and identity. So I would assume that you would be a major advocate for people getting in touch with all the different cultures and all the different identities that they have in their lives.
Absolutely. One of my big pushes is to get people to recognize or at least consider the idea that identity is fluid and that it's constructed. I think we're often pushed to choose one primary identifier and run with it. And that's really restrictive. And it doesn't make sense. We live in a multifaceted world. We are multifaceted people, and there's an internal diversity that needs to be valued so that you get to live a full sense of yourself. As you engage and connect and interact, there are multiple parts of you. So the metaphor that I tend to use in a lot of my workshops or presentations is that of one of those crystal sun catchers in the window. So it's all one object. It's one piece of crystal or glass. But depending on where the light shines is what reflection you get. So it's all a whole person. It's all a whole, existence. But there are multi-fractals all engaged and involved at the same time.
Why is it important for us to get in touch with our different cultures at any given period of time?
Well, it helps you break down barriers, right? And it also helps you recognize that there's so much more going on than what you see on the surface. And I think if you start to recognize your own multiplicity, you make space for others to be more than what you might expect. And so you open yourself up to being surprised or to engaging and connecting in ways that are unexpected. And that's a really beautiful thing.
I mean, do people have to be born into a certain culture? I'm sure there are some people that'll say, to bring up the St. Patrick's Day example,
right.
You know, it's a day for everyone to be Irish, but some may say, oh, no, but you can't celebrate because you're not Irish. I mean, there's so many just different arguments out there regarding how you can identify with a certain culture and whether or not you have the right to. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. Does anyone own any particular culture?
This is the the tricky territory of cultural appropriation, right? Who has a right to claim is really a big question. And if you look at the different cultures, I think there's more at stake for certain cultures than others as far as how it's appropriated or how it's used or who is denied access. But I think when it comes down to celebration, that's an inclusive event. So I would argue that anyone can celebrate a culture that is not necessarily one they were born into, but consider how you might be appropriating a culture if it's not in the spirit of celebration.
I think we hear a lot about that in like the music industry, for example, right now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of concerns with artists stealing other people's culture in order to profit. And I am not that hip in a way, right? I sort of live under a rock a lot of times. And so I'm really lucky when my students or my colleagues bring these pressing contemporary topics to my attention because I don't have cable and I sort of live, you know, in my little hole, which is still a very, you know, full and enriching hole. Mm-hmm. I do wonder about people's intentions when they appropriate without giving credit. Yeah. And I think that's where the hurt comes from or the anger comes from, is you're not even acknowledging this history that you're tapping into for personal benefit.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Vanessa Roberts. She's a self-described artivist, an artist, activist, and academic, and she's meeting with people in La Crosse, giving presentations on diversity and identity. So I know a lot of your work focuses on people just getting in touch with and recognizing their own identities, mm-hmm. however many they have.
Mm-hmm.
What about people who decide, I don't want to identify with that part of my history or that, that part of where I grew up, just people that deny certain parts of their identity. Is that okay?
There's a white anti-racist activist, Chris Crass, who I met a couple of weeks ago, and he gave a really powerful keynote in which he suggested that as activists reach out to form community or reach out in their work, that we need to adopt a practice of calling in, not calling out. And I really love that approach because it's a means of meeting people where they are. And I know that in my own journey, at different points in this process, I have been more involved or less involved, more in tune or less in tune. When I first started doing presentations or putting together performance pieces, I was very much focused on my German heritage. And there was a time when I would say I was afraid or uncomfortable with my blackness. And it's because my father's family lives in Baltimore, Maryland, and didn't have the financial means to reach out and bring us to Baltimore as much as my mother's family did in Germany. And so I spent a significant chunks of my summers as a kid in Germany for 1, 2, 3 months at a time. You know, by the end of it, you're dreaming in German, you're thinking in German, you're identifying as German. And so I had this really harsh recognition when I entered graduate school and I went to NYU and was living in Brooklyn. I made a very conscious decision to hop on a Chinatown bus and to go to Baltimore and to meet my Baltimore family as a biracial woman. And I had a whole host of assumptions that they would be unwelcoming or they would feel like I was denying my Black heritage by claiming biracial. And much to my surprise and delight, I was embraced. And I remember my grandmother saying, you know, of course you're biracial. It's not like your mom's not your mom. And so that was this really powerful moment for me. And so I try to keep my own journey in mind when I encounter people who put up resistance to what I'm sharing, because I recognize that not everything is going to land, and something might, you know, settle but not take full hold. And maybe in, you know, 2 months, 2 years, it'll come to the surface and a shift might take place.
The conversation regarding multiracial identities has really been evolving quite rapidly, maybe, in your mind over the last handful of years?
Yes.
You know, a good example we can look to bureaucratically is the census.
Yes.
Checking off what race are you?
Yes.
That is not easy for everyone.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. Part of my talk at UWL is highlighting some of the forgotten or never acknowledged multiracial activism which led to the change on the census. It's not like magically in 2000 the federal government decided to take on this extra task of tracking the multiple racial identities of its citizens. That wasn't something that just came about. There were efforts put in place starting in the late 1970s where you had folks lobbying, folks getting signatures, folks making proposals, people really pushing to have that change. So the AMEA, the Association for Multiethnic Americans, is a longstanding multiracial organization, and they push that every child be able to identify fully. And so they were one of the main supporters and one of the main groups pushing for the census change.
Why is that important for people who are multiracial, you know, to be more thoroughly recognized at a federal bureaucratic level?
I think a lot of it has to do with the feeling that the all-inclusive other box is entirely dismissive, right? How am I supposed to just accept that I'm too complicated or too confusing for your options, right? And so I think that the ability to choose more than one box, to check more than one box, to acknowledge the richness of your identity is a means of affirming your sense of self. And yes, more of it has to do with family, with social circles, the increase in media recognition. But there is something about legislatively being recognized as a full human being and not this partial, complicated, too hard to track object.
Do you feel like the conversation surrounding multiracial identities is improving within the U.S.?
I think it's improving in the sense that you have this really powerful youth movement who are pushing back against the limited options, right? You have young folks connecting with the folks who came before them who are starting to form, you know, multiracial, intercultural, mixed race unions on student campuses. Or, for example, there's a critical mixed race studies program at DePaul University. There's now a critical mixed race studies conference. There's the Mixed Roots Literary Festival. You have Key and Peele, who are biracial Black men on Comedy Central, out in public claiming their biracial identity. So I think there's absolutely a shift taking place where you can't ignore it. So no longer is it when you're asked as a biracial person, oh, what are you? And if you happen to be mixed, you know, with white and a non-dominant culture. So in my case, being mixed with white and Black, People would often be like, oh, your dad's black? Great, you're black. And that would be the dismissive end of it. Now it's, oh, well, that's interesting. And it's a more inclusive conversation of what does it mean to be both of those things, rather than getting what I call mono-racialized.
Vanessa Roberts is a performance artist, activist, and academic from Boulder, Colorado. She was recently in La Crosse, sharing her performance art about diversity and identity issues with students. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up, more with Vanessa Roberts. We'll talk about code switching, the idea that people communicate in different ways depending on who they're talking to. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking with Vanessa Roberts about issues related to identity and diversity. The Boulder, Colorado artist, activist, and academic is half African American and half German, and she was recently in La Crosse sharing her performance art with students. We continue our conversation to talk about a concept known as code switching.
Code switching is a term that developed in linguistics, and it was trying to sort of tap how it is that people who are bilingual switch in and out of linguistic codes. It then got picked up by sociologists, broadly defined, and it morphed into this understanding that just like people slip between language codes, they also slip between cultural codes. So the idea is that you code switch in order to be better understood within the cultural context you find yourself. So right now I am in professional mode, right? But later when I try to catch my mom on the phone, I'll slip into daughter mode. Mm-hmm. Or later when I talk to my partner on the phone, I'll slip into interpersonal, goofy, Vanessa unedited mode, mm-hmm. right? And so it's this idea that we code switch without thinking. And the best description I can give of this is that if anyone has ever been a child, which I think is a safe assumption, right? And you were being chastised by an adult, and the adult is, you know, bah, 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 how could you? How dare you? And then all of a sudden the phone rings, and without thinking, they go, hello. Oh, no, it's not a bad time. And they just switch right into that neutral answer the phone type of a voice. That's code switching.
I mean, is code switching ever a bad thing? Especially as you talk about cultural appropriations before, when is it inappropriate to code switch?
I think it again comes back to that sticky topic of intention, right? I code switch absolutely between cultures in the sense that I speak differently with my German family, not just language-wise, than I do with my African-American family in Baltimore. There's a whole different set of cultural idioms and tones and slang or phrases that arise in either context. And I would just caution people when you're code switching to consider the reason it is being done or what you expect to gain from it being done. And if you keep that in mind, not only will you be practicing self-reflexivity, which I think is always healthy and necessary, but you can also start to consider the power dynamics that come into code switching. I mean, there are several arguments about code switching as a way of whitewashing your sense of self, of denying your cultural authenticity or your background. And I acknowledge those arguments, and I think that quite often people do feel compelled to code switch in order to succeed professionally or in order to integrate into, as students, right, into higher academics. But I think, again, we have to acknowledge the fact that this world is imperfect. It's a racist, sexist, homophobic, skewed system. We're working on it, right? Mm-hmm. But I view code switching as a tool, so intentional code switching, as a tool to gain access to spaces in order to shift, in order to enact change.
You've made the argument that businesses really need to be conscious of code switching. Why does this matter in the business world? I mean, you know, you and I could talk about how we've code switched. We're being professionals on the radio right now.
Yes.
But in any given office, why does it matter?
It matters when you're thinking about inclusivity. Mm. I mean, that's a big buzzword. I work as a diversity and inclusion consultant in the Denver Boulder area. And one of my clients, that's what we're working on, is how do you make an inclusive environment in which folks coming in from all over the world, they employ a very diverse staff of folks. How do you make it so, yes, people have to adhere to a professional standard, but that professional standard is a global professional standard, not a white Eurocentric professional standard. And so that's a really difficult balance to strike. So it's this means of not throwing all standards out the window and saying, you know, anything goes in the office space, anarchy ensue. It's a way of saying, let's consider the fact that there's multiple ways to be professional. And that comes into the tricky territory of how do you wear your hair if you have a non-straight hair texture, right? Are you allowed as a woman with, you know, like myself, a whole mess of curls? Do I always have to try to tame them and put them up in order to appear professional? And I think the argument is, no, I shouldn't need to attempt to get my hair to do unnatural things just to be accepted as professional. And so it's an ongoing process to really consider how do we create an inclusive environment by recognizing who's code switching, who's being forced to code switch, and at what point do we say that's code switching in a way that's ineffective or a denial, and hence people leave, right? I mean, that's a big concern for businesses as well, is retention. So if you're unable to retain a diverse staff, maybe consider the culture that you're inviting them to partake in.
Another professional endeavor you're undertaking while you're here in La Crosse, which is fascinating to me, is you're actually going to be working with the La Crosse Police Department.
Yes.
Can you talk about what you will be meeting with them about?
Yeah, actually, this is a first for me. Huh. I have never done a training for law enforcement. It's something that has never presented itself. I tend to work primarily with youth and then with nonprofits, small businesses. I currently have a large business client, which has been a really great challenge. So to take on law enforcement, the opportunity presented itself, and I said, sure, let me take on this challenge. And honestly, I panicked a little bit.
Really?
I have limited experience with law enforcement, but my partner has a friend who's a member of the New York Police Department. And so I had a chance to reach out and get some tips on what not to do, essentially. And then I really did what I call a self-confession session. And I just journaled or jotted all of my own stereotypes and assumptions and prejudices against police, and just really confronted what was I bringing into this training. And so that was a really powerful place to start. And from there, I've crafted a training session. I have 3 hours with them. And rather than attempt to morph into some type A presenter full of, you know, stats and resources and this traditional model of presenter, I said, Vanessa, what are you good at? You're good at inviting people in to do a personal inventory and to consider how that affects their treatment of others. Why don't you do that? And so after much consternation and back and forth and deleting of PowerPoint slides and throwing out of articles and research, I am going to work with the officers on doing a cultural inventory of themselves.
Wow.
And recognizing what is it that they're bringing to the badge and how does that impact their interactions with members of the community.
I know this is your first time, but do you see this as something that could have a lot of potential, not only when it comes to race relations in La Crosse, but I mean, just across the country too?
It's a big dream, right? It's a new dream. I had never considered it before. And The type of work that I do is in direct response to diversity trainings that I had attended when I was an undergrad that I felt were demeaning or offensive. Basically, you're all racist, now change. And I was like, oh, that's horrifying. Like, this is not helping. And so thanks to a mentor, I have to give a shout out, Dr. C.W. Dawson Jr. He set me on this path of fusing performance with theory, with practical application. And it's been a really powerful journey, inviting people to consider my story, right? Because I think we're experts in ourselves. We can read and research as much as we want, but at the end of the day, it's all filtered through your own lens. And taking that approach to empower people to see themselves as change agents. And if not change agents, to see themselves as part of the larger system or part of the larger picture. And to think of applying that to law enforcement is pretty intriguing.
What do you hope they walk away with?
I hope they walk away with a greater sense that they matter as far as their cultural experiences, their cultural upbringing, their sense of self, that that doesn't disappear when they put on the uniform or when they put on the badge. I think we often have these expectations of pure objectivity, at least in academics, right? That there's some way to cut off who you are from what you're researching or what you're doing. And if you really look into it, that's really impossible. Even for quantitative scholars, who you are influences your research topic, how you research it, who you sample, how you get your data, how you write your models. It's not objective. And so to translate that lack of objectivity, not as a weakness, but as a strength, if you engage with it critically and in a reflexive manner, is really interesting territory.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Vanessa Roberts. She's based in Boulder, Colorado, and describes herself as an artivist, an artist, activist, and academic. She's visiting La Crosse, giving a series of performance-based presentations on diversity and identity. Finally, I want to just talk about the importance of incorporating art and performance art into teaching race and identity, and you are beaming right now.
Yes.
This is obviously something you're very passionate about.
I'm a huge proponent of theater, of the arts, as a way of creating space for people to engage in these difficult topics. Social justice tends to make most people cringe, or diversity makes most people go, "Ugh, please no, why?" And approaching it with humor or performance or art generates a different energy or a different vibe or a different feeling. It makes it less foreign. It makes it more accessible. I think rather than getting hit over the head with a bunch of stats or beautifully constructed terminology, to have it be personal, to have it be meaningful, to have it reflect the ideology in a way that's consumable, as a way that's relatable, you can sink your teeth into it, is incredible. And when I started this, I didn't know what I was doing. My first performance piece, How I Found Out I Was Black, which I'm still using today, almost 10 years later, the first time I performed it was at this local variety show in Colorado Springs at a small theater. And I just thought it was journal writing made public. I thought I was just talking about, you know, my experiences and how people thought I was black and how that made me feel, etc. And at the end of each performance, it was a 2-week run, there were folks waiting in the lobby to engage with me, to ask me questions, to share their experiences, to relate to what I was saying. And that was also when the light bulb started to go off, like, huh, there's an eagerness to engage, but you don't know how. And I think often folks of all cultural backgrounds and racial identities are afraid of saying the wrong thing, are afraid of offending. And so you opt for silence, which is not going to get us far.
Vanessa Roberts likes to call herself an artivist, part performance artist, part activist, and part academic. She's from Boulder, Colorado, and was in La Crosse in late March, sharing her performance art about diversity and identity issues with students and the La Crosse Police Department. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share a comment or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.